fail fast, learn quickly, move forward. That is classic business advice for startups and entrepreneurs. And it sounds so great, doesn't it? I mean, Fast Company, Inc. magazine, they're all filled with stories like that. There's, you know, everybody loves to talk about Uber and, you know, all the, you know, these startups that are challenging the rest of the world. Most of us work at companies that are pretty mired in the real world. We've got legacy systems to deal with. We've got processes that are older than we are. It's so exciting to think what it would be like to work at a lean startup. This is assuming that you don't want to get any sleep or ever see your family. And the people that work at startups often don't see their families or get much sleep. But say you want more of a balance and you want an organization that's as well-known and powerful as something like GE, but you also want some of those benefits, that innovation, that ability to turn an idea around quickly and test it in the market. And how does a mega-sized enterprise like GE play a nimble game like that? Well, one answer to that is their FastWorks program. It's an agile, quick turnaround approach to developing new products the way startups do it. And when I was talking with Neeraj, he was on my advisory board, and this was even before I had tricked him into coming and being my opening keynote. And he told me the one thing it teaches you is that you can't innovate by yourself. You really have to get people together. You have to get them thinking differently. He's become a real innovation evangelist over the last 2 years or so as he's worked at this. He is one of the innovation coaches with special training at GE, so he does this on a regular basis. And we inevitably got around to talking about how this changes how he runs IT for GE Process and Flow Technologies. How, as a CIO, has thinking like a lean startup changed the way he's managing the processes and the things that make IT work the way it works at GE? Because as we know, it's great to do that bimodal IT thing. It's great to be doing the fast turnaround cool stuff on the front end, but nobody ever gives IT a pass for having everything working perfectly on the back end. You know, we were joking out in the reception a little earlier about CIOs who have been in those board meetings when something suddenly goes wrong with the slides, and the CEO turns to the CIO and says, well, what's the problem here? You know, like you were all AV technicians. So everyone expects IT leaders to know everything about technology, and it all has to work great, and you have to innovate. And I mean, you all know, the list of job duties for IT leaders just keeps growing and growing. And on top of all of that, all of our users now have mobile supercomputers in their hands, and they all think they could do your jobs perfectly well. In fact, probably most of them think they could do it better. So this is the challenge that confronts IT leaders today. So what Neeraj is going to do in his opening keynote, he's going to explain a bit about how FastWorks actually does work. And then we are going to launch into a creativity exercise. And we're also going to talk a little bit about how this has changed his leadership approach to being a CIO. As many of you here probably know, GE Flow and Process Technologies is a $1.2 billion business that serves the oil and gas and the power segments. Neeraj has lived on 4 continents. He is a global citizen who now makes his home here in Houston. And he's relatively new to the Houston area, so I've been telling him how friendly and lovely everyone is here is, so you better come and introduce yourselves to him, because he is expecting to meet you all before he leaves here. And then prior to joining GE, he worked for 10 plus years in the high-tech industry in California. So please join me in welcoming our opening keynote, Neeraj Vijay.
Thank you very much. Good morning. I am very excited to be here, and thanks for spending this morning. I hope one of the key things which I was discussing with Mary Fran was we should not have any slides. But we pivoted, and we're going to have some slides. My intent is not to go and have a one-way monologue, but let's just make it a dialogue. So can we just get to the next level of slides, please? Thank you. My name is Neeraj Vijay. I'm fairly new to Houston. I happen to have 2 jobs in GE, the CIO, which is the non-glamorous part and the non-fun part, but it is what gets me in the job. The fun and the most exciting part of my job is being a FastWorks coach. And we'll briefly talk about what FastWorks is, But before we begin, show of hands, how many of you guys have heard of Lean Startup? A fairly good number of people. Lean Startup is nothing different but a management style which allows a startup to become more successful. So over the period of time, they have identified what makes a big company successful. They've also identified what makes smaller company or a startup successful. And that methodology is the Lean Startup one. Can we go to the next one, please? My intent is not to tell you great about GE, but this is just the preface slides to tell you that, hey, one of the key things which GE is facing today in the fast-changing world is we are about $150 billion in size, and size brings inertia. And as we go big, we need to be fast, because Jeff Immelt says, who happens to be our CEO, you know, we want to be a big company, but not a slow company. We want to be a big company, but a fast company. And this is our journey towards how do we get ourselves to think like a startup, think like an agile company which is able to learn, fail, and learn, and then succeed. And if we are able to go and do that, that's the whole journey of FastWorks is. It's more than $300,000, because 300,000 people, because we just finished our acquisition with Alstom, so it's almost 400,000 people, 175 companies. It's not a small task, and by no means it is something which we are taking it lightly across GE. What matters is how do we go and learn and grow. If we just continue to grow and we don't learn from it, we won't be in the industry for about 100 years. Nothing which you guys have not seen across, but this statement stuck with me. Do you guys agree with this? We all know customer determine our success, but how many times we have got IT projects which has failed to deliver its promised results? And when certainly for me, I've been a big failure in many, many, many projects where we all created many ROIs. It's going to get 200% returns. It's going to go in and give me ROI within 8 months. And 10 years later, I'm still waiting for that 8 months to happen. And there is a reason for that. So I have certainly learned a lot to say, how do we go in and learn from this lean startup methodology, which GE calls FastWorks. GE didn't do it alone. There are two individuals, which Eric Ries and David Kidder, these are the people who helped us define our FastWorks approach. There are also many other people who were participative in terms of defining how we go and embrace our external thinking and cutting-edge practices in our culture. And it is a journey. We are on it, and it's going to take a few years for us to be completely FastWorks oriented and the way we start to go and work. Not only just think, but work. Can we play the video, please?
Some of the greatest discoveries begin with our customers. Not with certainty or clearly defined paths, but with a question, a thought, or an idea. Experiments are cycles of testing and learning, of returning to an idea and finding a better way, of challenging norms instead of accepting them. This is how we create. We build and move and power and cure, working faster and smarter on things that matter. The world is changing faster than ever. We need a new way of working to stay competitive. We need to validate, learn, and iterate quickly. This is FastWorks. It's revolutionizing the way we work by changing the way we think and act every day.
It's as simple as that. You identify what a customer wants by being closer to them, which we have heard many, many times. We go and identify how can we be faster and how do we, this is the most important learning for me, and it made me humble, and I still continue to think we don't do a very good job just in general testing our assumptions. And especially being in IT, we tend to believe our either sales team, manufacturing, or any other ones, and say, hey, if we do this, it's going to save $1 million. well, what are the base assumptions which is going to go on, and can we test them fairly quickly? I think that's the key learning for me as well. How do we do validations? And then how do we go and come out with solutions which really is going to go and drive the results which we are looking for? If I go and define it in a very, very simple form, which we all are very familiar looking at this, you define the customer need, define a potential solution, which usually our business community are very good at that. They usually come back to say, okay, this is what I want, and this is what it's supposed to be doing, okay? What are the leap of faith assumptions? What is the assumption you have taken into consideration? Can we validate those? How do we validate those? By creating small experiments. We call it MVP, minimum viable products. Once we create many, many minimum viable products, what do we learn from them? And once we learn, we know it works or it doesn't work. If it works, then we continue. And if it does not, we pivot. And pivot is a term which is now very, very popular in GE. You know, I've seen people, having cartoons to say, hey, a female talking to a male guy to say, hey, I'm not leaving you, I'm pivoting for a different man. Or people leaving from one organization within GE going to the other one, say, hey, I love this division, but I'm pivoting to a different division. So I've seen this word being very, very commonly used, sometimes misused, but I think that's the intent. But how do we get to learning? By creating these experiments. And we'll do a brief exercise as well. But and as we do Q&A, I'll share some of the examples which we have done in IT specifically, either in ERPs, either in e-commerce, either in security, any of those scenarios, we should be able to go and do MVPs, do experiments, learn from the failure. If we succeed, then continue to go in this route. So I think that's the whole gamut of FastWorks. It's nothing which you guys have not heard before. Talk is easy. Implementation is hard. And I think that's what I'm learning, and I've been very humbled. The more I do FastWorks coaching, the more humble I get, because the more I know the only way to succeed is to fail. And it's easy to say, but very, very difficult to put into your cast iron stomach to say, I love to fail. And I'll share some of the couple of personal stories and see if it gels with you guys. We mean business in GE. It's not just a concept in terms of culture change and all of those scenarios. In terms of what we have, something called as growth boards. Growth boards is almost like a venture fund. If you have a great project, either NPI, either IT, or any other ones, you know, it could be anything which has to do with any of those scenarios. You get seed funding. The seed funding would allow you to do experiments, the MVP. If you find that we are succeeding in those minimum viable product, then you go and do a launch and do a growth. And it's as simple as this, but very, very difficult for any organization who has been in existence for 100 years. And I think that's the transformation which GE has gone through, and it continues to go through. You see her CIO as well. Usually, I think that's where it gets difficult to say, how do you go and do seed money, launch, and a growth when you have projects which are traditionally waterfall or which requires a very small amount of IT input in terms of people and money, but a large amount of business outcome, because you require cross-pollination of marketing, sales, operations, all of these guys to do their job to be able to go and do an output. So I think that's the key element of making the growth boards work. We are on the journey, and it's happening. I personally have pitched out to the growth boards. I've sat through the other side of the story where people pitch in, and it's not very difficult to think about experiments, but it's very difficult to define what your leap of faith assumptions are. And we'll do some experiments in short order. What does it take to scale? Because if you can do it with a startup of 25 people, that's great. But what would it take to go and do it for 350,000 people? What we have is GE Believes. So GE Believes is our value system. That's the way the whole organization works. That's the way the whole evaluation of each of the individual as well as leaders happen, to say, are we living the GE Believes? Fastworks, which we talked about, and then performance development. So we no longer have performance management, which is the annual appraisal cycle. We have a tool which happens to be on the cutting edge. It's on my iPhone as well. It's almost where anyone in my team, up, down, across, can give me an insight and which can tell me, should I continue doing what I'm doing or should I consider doing something different? The reason this performance development is so critical in terms of the way we are able to scale is if I continue doing in terms of failing, and there are 10 people saying, hey, continue, fail, it gives me more momentum to go and experiment more. Versus, and that includes my boss, that includes my boss's boss, and all the way to the CEO of, which happens to be Jeff Immelt. So that's the whole concept, how do you scale? Very, very simple. You develop, you learn, you act, and discover. Nothing which you guys have not seen it. But how do you go and do this on a scenario where you're doing this every day? You got to have a digital experience where you are able to go and innovate faster, learn faster by failing faster. You got to have a different way of thinking in terms of different lens. And then you should be able to go and bring all of that to real world. So I think that's the crux of it. That's the crux which I want to share with you in terms of slideage. I want to move to a more interactive, let's just bring some positive, more energy in the room. I see it's morning, coffee is wearing down. And get to a scenario where we are able to go and do some scenarios where we can really do some assumption testing and see how this changes the way we look at base assumptions. Mary, you, Mary Fran, are you ready to go and do an experiment with us?
Ready.
Are you guys ready to do an experiment with us? Okay.
And it involves a cute little rubber ball, too.
Okay, it's a very simple exercise. And we'll spend a few minutes understanding what we are trying to do here, right? It's a very simple exercise. Can I have the ball, please?
Yes, please.
Very simple ball. Thank you for getting this one.
You're welcome.
We have to be able to move the ball. Can you go back, please? One.
Well, it's funny. I was texting with our speaker manager in the back of the room saying, what's up with the clicker? Because usually the clicker works better. And it turns out, and this is one of those failures in testing your assumptions, and because we have set up, we brought in an online app to do a stopwatch count up while we do this experiment, and that apparently was slowing down what was happening with the clicker. So
look, we pivoted.
We pivoted. We probably turned it off for a moment. I'm sure we can get it back on online.
So it's very simple, right? Any questions on the experiment, right? Very simple. The task which is given to us from our supply chain team is to be able to move the ball. And if we have to move the ball where everyone has to be able to touch the ball, how much time do you think it's going to take?
4 minutes.
Okay. Anybody who can improve on 4 minutes and come to you how we're going to do it. So we'll just, so that's the broader exercise. Anybody thinks we can do this better than 4 minutes? What's the number? 9 seconds.
90 seconds.
Very good. Anybody thinks who can do it faster than 90 seconds? Okay. Let's start with this. How would we do this? Okay. Yeah. So look, that's one of the way. There is one experiment defined here. We'll go on this side. How were we thinking of doing it for how much time we were talking about? 5 minutes or
4 minutes?
4 minutes. Okay.
And how would you actually move the ball around to do it in 5 rather than in 90 seconds?
Mm-hmm. 50 seconds. And then if you look at that, it's approximately more than 4.5 minutes.
I think it's a fair assumption.
Okay.
Why don't we test this hypothesis?
All right.
Yes, please.
I was thinking if you put it on the table.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody touches it.
Well, two people touch it at once. Then you move to the next table.
That's experiment number two. I love it.
Good.
Any other thoughts? Yes, please.
Experiment
number
we're probably going to have to try that.
I think let's do this, right? So we have got base assumptions where if our friend Mike says we put the ball and we have seen the size of the ball and then we'll touch it. Let's see how that works. We have got a scenario where how would you do this? You would pass it on.
Mm-hmm.
No, you put the ball in and perfect. And then we have a traditional scenario, and then we have one more experiment. We've got four. Any in the back? Yes, please.
Walk two parallel lines of people in this room, and fall down the middle, and two people touch the ball.
How much time do you think it's going to take?
20 seconds.
Okay, so we've got 4 minutes to 20 seconds within how much time? We've got, okay, let's.
And are you all factoring in this room and the tables and how closely you're sitting to each other? We don't have an auditorium to play this in, so
okay, let's do this.
The environment matters too, yes.
So the key here is each one of them have a right to their opinion, and so our business leaders as well as IT leaders and all of this. And each idea is a good idea. But if I were to go and try this for all of this room, we'll be here till the evening or till the cow comes home. It's not feasible. So can we do the same four experiments with these two tables? And can they be testing of hypothesis?
They're our MVP test, our minimum viable product.
Perfect. Thank
all
you.
All right.
So look, what we just did, we took an idea which was presented to us by various set of people, and we're going to test all four of them as quickly as possible and see which one has the least amount of time taken, but how much of them are feasible? Because if I put a ball in here and there are 10 people trying to touch the ball, where only two people can touch it at the same time, is the ball moving around? Not, but what are we going to learn out of that scenario? Let's go and try it. Are we ready to try it? Any volunteer tables? I don't want to give benefit of doubt just to the two tables. Mary Fran.
Well, and I'm thinking we'll have the two tables here, so we'll do the two, and then we multiply it by the tables in the room. Patricia, how many tables are in the room? 15.
Perfect.
All right, 15. So we'll see, what was our first experiment? It was just passing the ball. And that was, the idea was that would take 5 minutes to do the whole room.
4 minutes.
All right, so that's experiment one. There we go. And we will start the clock now.
Okay. Stop. So we've got about 7 seconds, 7's time 15. We are even better than that.
We're math challenged on my end. Yeah, 7 times 15
perfect.
Is what?
Okay, so that was a good experiment. There was some amount of fun in terms of the passing part, which was a good learning, because in real life it could happen as well, right? We might find some, Corey might try to trick it. Fantastic. Let's do another one very quickly. Which's the next one?
What was the second one?
Put in the middle, okay?
All right, in the middle and everyone comes to it rather than going around? Okay, still these two tables. All right, go on the clock.
Okay, stop. Well, this took eight seconds.
More than
the previous one.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting learning.
And it seemed like it would be more efficient, didn't it?
It felt like it was more efficient when we originally thought.
Yeah.
The problem was the ball stayed in one table and the second table moved to the ball. If you were going to do it across the room, you'd have to have somebody move the ball from one table to the next table
Yep. Can I get a round of applause? This is the learning metric.
Oh, there we go. All right, let's try it again, and I'll move the ball this time. All right, ready? There, I'll put it on this side where most everybody is. All right, and then start the clock.
Okay, stop.
5 seconds.
Okay, so we learned something and we improved. And the only reason we improved is because we were ready to fail. The first one was a failure. Did anybody feel it was a failure? If we had the right spirit, it felt like we learned something. Mm-hmm. How often does this happen where we define our system criteria, we have given the business requirement, and we never usually say, okay, didn't you define these? Why are you asking them to change? I used to be the same way. I used to hate. I says, guys, you sign in blood to say whatever you want, and that's what we're going to build. We're going to try and build with Agile and a few other scenarios, but this is what the outcome was going to be. Guess what? I am absolutely changed. I no longer hold them responsible for changing their mind. There are some of the people who are part of my team in this audience as well. I use the word diplomatic immunity. Anytime you do a system rollout, anytime you do anything which is what you thought others should be doing and they did not do their fair share, either get trained, learn, defined requirements, till the time we gain the benefit, they have diplomatic immunity. And that's the only time you would be able to innovate freely without feeling that, yeah, I'm getting hurt. And my urge to you, and I've been part of scenarios where we've trained the heck out of people, ERPs, anybody on the ERP journey would know. Mm-hmm. And when we go live, there is a dip. Mm-hmm. Well, and you go and talk to the team, they say, well, I tried, I trained them. Why didn't they come to the training? Why didn't they tell us earlier? Well, they have diplomatic immunity. You can't charge them guilty. That's mm-hmm. the way I have changed the way I look mm-hmm. at it. You want to do the last one very quickly?
Yes, we had the third one was someone moves the ball and everyone touches it. Was that?
I think you were the ones who identified the four. Yes, please, come on up.
All right.
How would you want to do it?
Mm-hmm.
You want to do it for the two tables?
There we go.
Is there something which you, okay, let's do it.
Okay.
Yeah. Can you start on the clock, please? 1, 2, and 3, go. Stop.
Uh-huh.
Well, it's more than what we thought. So just
hang on.
Just don't go there yet. Just can you hang on for one more minute, please?
Mm-hmm.
Is there, we took 7 seconds more than what we were supposed to originally, that's what you thought, right? Okay, timing mm-hmm. failure. But is there any learning from what you just did and tell the team? That's one. That's very good. What I noticed was if you would have told, or if you would have told to say, guys, everybody put your hand up and I'm going to move,
yeah,
that would have been another learning as well.
Cool.
So guys, my intent here is when we can do this with a very small room like this and learn within 5 minutes, there are 5 different ways of passing the ball and each one of them have a learning. I think we proved the point to say when we do MVPs, we really realized to say, if you would have chosen the first one with 4 minutes, or even the one which you identified for 9 minutes, we would have not been able to finish it unless we tell everyone to say, keep your hands up, or move around and I'm going to be running around. So there is implicit learning in this scenario as well. And I think that was my point. I hope you got something out of it.
Neeraj, let's try the final idea that came from the back of the room was people in a line with their hands up. Let's see.
Let's do this. Last one.
So
I want to make sure we have enough time for this.
We'll do it with our same 9, so we'll keep our control group the same. And all of you come up here and form, do we want one straight line or do we want two?
Two lines.
Two. All right. Here we go. And who amongst you is the fastest? You don't want a woman in heels doing this, so. All right, we're gonna start with, okay, here we go. Are we ready on the clock? Oh, we can't see the clock. Here we go. Okay.
That's fine, we'll start the clock right on the time.
Start the clock and we'll see.
Well, go. Stop.
Okay, now let's see what the number is. Let's reveal.
Four seconds.
Thank you.
So guys, I think there is implicit learning in this scenario, we didn't feel very painful when we failed. And guess what? We failed 5 times and 0.04 is the best timing we got. How many times we are able to put a cast iron stomach to say things or the ideas which each one of you came up with were perfect ideas. They were great ideas. They needed to have some learnings added to it so that we can make it better. I think that is the whole concept of FastWorks. I hope I gave you a little bit of glimpse on this scenario. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Let's open it up for dialogue and discussion. That was part of the prepared part.
Good.
Let's just have open dialogue.
And let's have a round of applause for our experiment participants up here. Thank you very much. I wanted to, and I'm going to start the questioning, but I would love you all to join in. We've got microphones that can run to your tables for your 15 seconds of fame. And I hope that you will take part as well. I have a number of questions. One of the questions I asked Niraj when we talked about this was, how has this, you innovation coach and you teach people how to do this, how has this changed the way you're managing your own team and your work as a CIO?
It certainly makes me much more humble and in many forms. There used to be a time where I used to be more worried about saving my turf. Mm-hmm. Like IT did everything what they needed to do. Somebody didn't do their job in the other function. And I'm being very honest about this. And would usually keep my head high to say, like, well, I did everything I could, or my team did everything I could. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, what matters is what value and the outcome we are able to get to the end customer. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to say, it takes a lot of learning and humility to say, guys, it doesn't matter, we failed. And the word is we, mm-hmm. and includes IT and others as well. And even if I succeed, it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, the team failed. Mm-hmm. And I think that concept, you have to internalize it first, which takes a lot of effort and right kind of confidence. Mm-hmm. And then you can basically get to others getting on with you.
When you said something interesting too about not seeing, not using the word fail so much as using the word output.
Outcome
which sounded
and
like
learning.
A very GE thing to say, by the way.
Yes, yes, it is. Like there are three things which is the most commonly used term in GE now, and some of it is by design, some of it is, we heard about pivot, you know, mm-hmm. We talked about. The other one is outcome, because in GE, may it be NPI, new product introduction, may it be systems, may it be IT, there is a little bit of arrogance which comes with being in GE and the heritage we were part mm-hmm. of, to mm-hmm. say, guys, we know what the world needs, we know what needs to get done.
Yeah.
Well, when we have scenarios where the world is changing that fast, and the amount of time which we take to go and come out with a new either offering an IT or software or mm-hmm. product, we got to be a scenario where we are more nimble and we are learning to fail and failing fast mm-hmm. and then coming out with it. One of the favorite things, and I think many of you guys have been on projects, which we say, hey, if this project fails, I am fired, right? Many of you guys have been part of that scenario. Well, I would want to say, if you had a scenario where you were to say, if this project fails and we have only spent $100,000 versus $10 million, I won't get fired. Mm-hmm. I would just pivot. Mm-hmm. I just didn't know how do I go and make sure that happens when it, only with $100,000 versus $10 million.
Yeah.
And that's what changed the way I look at it.
Well, and when I think of how many CIOs over the years have been the casualties of a multi-million dollar ERP failure, it's so incredibly common. And it's not that one, it's like a security breach and the target CIO gets fired. You know, it's a little bit of a stretched argument to say that was that one person's fault. So when a head needs to roll.
They can still put it on me that could happen. I hope it does not happen, but it could happen. Right. But look, the key here is the intent. If your mm-hmm. intent is to fail and learn versus fail and not learn, mm-hmm. then the outcome would still be the same.
Yeah. All right, any questions from the room? I have more. Oh, excellent. There's one right over there.
Yeah, Dee Waddell, just quick question for you. That's a pretty big cultural transformation that GE is making, especially with senior leaders going and talking about this. Can you give us some insight how the culture has changed and what the company has done to provide an environment where that type of thinking, that type of accountability, frankly, is accepted?
So that is a challenge which we continue to deal with on a daily basis. Because as funny as it sounds, I'm talking about this, I'll go back at the end of the day, I might be, again, move towards my traditional way of thinking. So I have to reinvent myself again and again because it's the normal self to say, hey, it's my idea, it's my gut, it has to be right. Well, if it is right, let's prove it. So it is an element which there are three things which any organization, if they can figure it out and then align those things, usually they go, the adoption is faster. One is your annual appraisal cycle, right? I mean, because that defines your promotions and how much you are going to get raised and all of those scenarios. And that goes from the top to the bottom, 8-9 layers deep. We have changed our performance management system to performance development system, and there is a reason it has changed. And it no longer is 1 year cycle where at the end of the year you say, what did I do? Now, if I'm doing experiments every time and my experiments are 4 days each, I might have a 4-day cycle of my evaluation. And it sounds funny, but that's what we are trying to go and do. Today, this year, we will not have an annual appraisal cycle for IT. Mm. That's a big, big, big change. I don't think there's anything bigger than that can happen. And obviously, second scenario for our leaders who are senior leaders, they are not measured on how much just the P&L output and profitability, but they're also measured on what kind of support they have provided to Fastworks. So they've gone through their mindset change. Anytime there is, and the reason they have to be thinking differently is, why do we go to senior management? Because we need money, right? I mean, mm-hmm. Other than that, we said, hey, come for the ribbon cutting ceremony. Other than that, leave us alone. Mm-hmm. And I'm paraphrasing, but you know what I'm referring to. But if they go and be a part of this learning process where you're metering it, so now I have an option of, if 10 people have 10 different ideas, which we saw in this room, I can experiment them in 15 minutes each today versus trying to do this for the whole room. I have more IT projects which start, but many projects will never pass to a scenario because they fail to deliver what the expected outcome was. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the cycle which we continue to have to go to. And ERPs, any of you guys going through ERP journeys? I mean, you would think you will not be able to do ERPs through this way. And I used to think the same way. We did an experiment, learning failure, yada, 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 where we rolled out ERP, where the first thing we rolled out is customer-facing scenarios. So I can be able to do coding in Europe, I should be able to go order entry in Europe. We realized the same order entry online e-commerce in the US was not the same in Europe. The adoption is very, very slow. So the business case which was built on that scenario to say I'm gonna have a $10 million of incremental revenue, within 30 days we realized we were supposed to get 100 quotes, we got two. Something is wrong. Guess what? We refined our business case. We ended up doing it, but it was a different business case.
Yes.
I hope it
well,
makes.
Well, and you had a wonderful example, the CNG in a box, that project, the one where you
absolutely,
can you
absolutely.
Can Google this and go see this example.
I mean, this is yeah. open for people to look at. I mean, I not only do IT, but I also do a lot of product NPI coaching as well, right? I mean, it's just... first of all, it's much more fun because it's more tangible. This is what we want to do with our customers. We came out with, this is the time when oil was at $100. Remember those days, long, long time ago? And CNG was the big thing, right? CNG, LNG, and LNG still is viable. we came out with a concept to say, hey, is there a way we can convert an existing gas station into a CNG gas station? With obviously some, so this is a CNG in a box. So you come out with a compressor, you come out with a gas mechanism, and then should be able to do remote monitoring and diagnostic of all of the compressors and everything, which would it take. Very, very good concept. But when we started like this, and this is a selling pitch, so be with me here, guys. You walk into a gas station, your car has a data ring. The data ring knows who you are. Corey, you bring your car in and says, Corey, you've been driving pretty good. You've been a good driver. Hey, there is a free donut and a coffee. Come inside because you've been driving and giving a good gas mileage. Hey, by the way, your car also needs an oil change, and there is oil change coupon on the scenario. That data exchange, all of those scenarios was part of the selling hype. Internet of Things, perfect. Like, it felt like this is the future. My car talks to me, my gas station talks to me, and I'm right there. We started to experiment, we started to do this. The people and the companies who usually do CNG vehicles are our UPS, mm-hmm. or USPS, the gas company, and few others as well. This is, I don't care about data ring. Mm-hmm. I don't care. I need to be able to manage my fleet. Guess what? We were selling the concept. This is the next generation thing, a gas station which talks to you. Mm-hmm. Looks pretty cool. I was part of that. I felt like, man, this is going to change the world. We tested the hypothesis. We said, let's just do one. We put it in life. The whole project originally was a multi-million dollar project. We spent $73,000, tested the hypothesis, get the first prototype out in 92 days, which is very good from a GE standards because we have toll gates and all of those scenarios. And when we started to talk to the customers, this is nice, but that's not what we want. Mm-hmm. What we want is this, because that's what drive our outcome. Big hurt on the ego. Mm-hmm. It was not easy. By the way, you can Google CNG in a box. The product is great, but doesn't have data ring. It has remote connectivity. It has RMND. But things which I showed you or talked to you about, none of them is there in the product. And guess what? If we have not followed it, multi-million dollar later, we would have got the data ring because we had the technology. But we would have missed the time and what market was looking for. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, I mean, CNG will come back eventually, but we learned very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. So it was a big failure, but cost us $90,000. We learned a lot. So my plea to everyone here as well as GE folks is the best investments you can do is not to do the investments in the things which the customers don't want. And that's true for IT. That's true for anything else as well. I hope it makes sense.
It truly does. Do we have a question back there? Oh, I thought we did. I have a question about, we talk about this a lot in IT, about the customer centricity. In fact, on our panel discussion a little later, we're going to talk, and I'm always interested in how. How do you get the customer feedback? I mean, GE has never come to my house and asked me anything. So how do you get your IT people? How do you put them out in the field? Do you send them to gas stations? I mean, how do you do that part of it where you really start getting more customer opinion back?
I think it's more easier than we think, but it's more difficult internally to do it than anything else. We tend to usually, and I'm going to go with IT and then we'll go to the product
sure.
example fairly quickly. In IT, usually how many of you have teams who would say, okay, sales or marketing or any, what do you guys want? Let's have a meeting. Let's do identification of requirements. Okay, but if we add one more element to say what benefits it's going to drive, many of us already do that, right? ROI analysis. Mm-hmm. But let's also do one more step to say, what makes you think that those ROI would happen? What are your leap of faith assumptions? Leap of faith assumptions in my case was e-commerce in the US would behave the same way as e-commerce in Europe. Mm. We went, we tested 1 month, and look, in December we went live with the coding and the e-commerce tool. And there's nothing at the back. It just was creating email. There was no ERP, nothing. But it allowed us to say how many people we all know, if we will make it, they will come. Let's test it. Mm-hmm. And we did. We learned. So the fact is, and many times business will challenge you to say, I am telling you. It says, well, I trust you. No problems. Let's do this. Let's do a hypothesis. And can we do this in 4 weeks? Can we do this for 8 weeks? Can we do this for one region? Mm-hmm. Can we do this for one product? I continue to think a lot to say, can I go live with ERP on one product? It's funny as it sounds, but if I really drive one product to go and give me the right OTD, on-time delivery, right profitability, yada, 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 I can scale it for 10, and then I can scale it for the whole company. That's mm-hmm. a different company. Mm-hmm. But I think it starts with us asking and really enforcing it with the business. Is it easy? No. I mean, I won't lie to you. Do I have people in my organization who continue to want me not to ask that question? Thou shalt do this. I'm telling you, just do it. Okay, I'm trusting you. Let's mm-hmm. let's test it. And that's on the IT side. On the product side, I think that is pretty clear. You don't even have funding. Remember the growth board we talked about? If it's a big project, the growth board would ensure you have done your customer intimacy test. And I think that's the way we do it.
All right. All right, we are unfortunately out of time. And I hope that, Niraj, you're going to spend a little time with us today. Will you be around?
Absolutely.
All right, good.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Big round of applause, please.